You know, I would say the greatest empowerment that you can provide to your client is trust that they know what is best for them. Even if you don't agree with it, trust that they are doing the very best that they can with the information that they have. And when you can fill in the gaps, you are allowing them to live a fuller, richer life on their own terms. And who doesn't want to live life on their own terms?
Welcome, my friend, to the Conversations for Financial Professionals podcast. I'm your host, Dominique Henderson. And as a veteran of the financial services industry, I was curious to find out why, despite all the good that financial professionals do, that yet the term financial advisor would clear the room so fast at a dinner party. Why was this? And what was this gap between consumers of financial services and the providers of those services? In this podcast, I seek to close this gap by having forward-moving conversations to advance the profession of giving financial advice and provide tools to the next generation of financial professionals to serve their clients at the highest level. You see, as providers of financial services, we have the awesome privilege of partnering with consumers to help change family trees, normalize the creation of wealth, and help the industry as a whole do less harm and more good. So it's time to sit back and enjoy the conversation. As we continue our theme for season 6 as the talent pipeline in financial services, I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Brandy Baxter about integrating financial coaching with financial planning. In this conversation, Dr. Baxter and I uncover some myths about all the different terms that relate to financial services, like financial advising, financial planning, financial coaching, and financial counseling. Make sure you get your pen and paper out for these definitions. We also cover how to develop financial coaching as a skill set. What organizations exist to help people find good financial coaches? And what is the standard for being a good financial coach? What are the skills? How does one obtain them? We finally discuss marrying these two different disciplines within the industry. I, for the longest, have been saying that I see a convergence between financial advice and financial coaching. So I was curious to get Dr. Baxter's perspective on this convergence and what she had to say about it. So many gems of wisdom for you to discover in our talk today. Now it's time to sit back and enjoy the conversation. Welcome to another episode of Conversations for Financial Professionals, where we are helping the next generation of financial advice move along the continuum. And today we have a friend, a colleague, Dr. Brandy Baxter. You are the owner of Living Abundantly, where you coach couples to shift their mindset and bring future financial goals into present reality. You're also an accredited financial counselor and financial fitness coach. You have a BA in communication, a MS in management, and a graduate certificate in executive coaching, along with a doctorate in strategic leadership. We know who the smartest one on this podcast is. You are the author of the book, The Three Little Divas: Reach Your Money Goals in 3 Steps Before You Huff and Puff and Blow Your Next Paycheck Away. Love that title. A book written about three women and their money personalities. In addition to serving your community by providing financial education, you're also a veteran of the community. I'm sorry. Brandy is also involved in the veteran community. You are the co-founder of At Ease Texas, a nonprofit social support organization that facilitates peer groups of women in the military community. You are a veteran of the United States Air Force. Thank you for your service. A spouse of an Air Force veteran, and you strive to be a servant leader in your community. You're also the 2020 recipient of the Governor's Volunteer Award for Service to Veterans, a member of the Association of Financial Counseling, Planning, and Education Board of Directors, chair of the AFCPE Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Task Force, and a voting member of the City Mesquite Housing Board. Welcome to the podcast, my friend.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I'm a big proponent and fan of making sure people have their flowers while they're here. So people are always like, Dominique, why don't you just read off the bios? Like, dude, these are accolades that these people earn, man. You need to give them their props. So I'm happy to read that stuff. I know I like it when people read mine. So what a return
to
favor.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. So this topic we're going to talk about today, you and I talked several weeks ago at this point now. We're recording this in March. This integrating financial coaching with financial planning, the future of the industry, something that is near and dear to me because I've been financial planning slash advising for a long time now. You've been on the financial coaching side and you see that, and I see this convergence happening. And so that's what I really want to get into today. And I think it's going to be really, really worthwhile. But let's start this with kicking off about vernacular definitions, right? We might not all be using the same dictionary when it comes to defining these things. So could you please help us understand what is the difference between financial coaching and financial advice or financial planning or whatnot?
So my dear friend, Sandra Davis, created this beautiful financial continuum that outlines each of the components of a financial professional and how they interact with a client along their journey. And I think it's helpful that we realize, despite all the language and the vernacular and the terminology, we are all serving a client along different parts of their journey. And so financial coaching is a supportive environment where we look at the behavior of a client with their relationship to money, and we help them identify what are some of the mental blocks that are in the way of helping them have that most successful relationship with their money. Financial advisors, on the other hand, they have the technical know-how to look at the client's financial situation and provide advice on what maneuvers and what steps and what strategies they should take to make sure that they maximize their financial experience. So on the spectrum, one deals with more of the client's mindset and their relation to money, and the other deals with what are the tools, strategies, and techniques that the client needs to know to maximize their financial experience.
No, I love the way you put that. That is not only eloquent, but I think very accurate. And then I start thinking about how some financial planners, and I want to be real specific here, certified financial planners are acting as financial advisors. And they do pretty much what you said there. Of course, under probably a different framework than all financial advisors, because we know there's no, you know, set framework, unfortunately, in this industry. And the audience is aware of that if they've been listening to me for a while. So I want to park on something that you said that I think is super key to, as a distinction. And I wonder if you agree on this, between financial coaching and financial advising, is that supportive role that you talked about. Yeah, I think is really, really important. I want to double click on that, if you may, for a second, and just kind of expand on that supportive role.
So being trained as a financial counselor, I learned a lot of experience and a lot of skills on how to help the client understand, from an education standpoint, their financial journey. And that is a super useful tool to have in my tool belt. However, as a financial coach, I've learned the importance of not telling my client what to do, but really stepping into the space alongside my client while they navigate and understand and develop a framework for what's important to them. And then I support them in getting there with the financial knowledge and expertise to help them avoid pitfalls. And so that supportive role is different, not only for sometimes for the coach, but even for the client who is accustomed to every other area of their life when they work with the professional who tells them what to do. But I get the unique opportunity of asking my client, what's important to you? How do we make this thing that's important to you more of a reality in your present life, not some pie in the sky that's so far away that it feels unattainable, but how can we take small incremental steps so that you begin experiencing this reward, this financial freedom that you know is possible for you? How do you experience it now? And more importantly, how do we identify what are some of the messages that you may be saying to yourself that are hindering you from making steps in the direction toward financial freedom?
I love it. I love it. Man, so many juicy rabbit trails you just gave me here. Okay. So one of them is the following: is I wholeheartedly agree that this, and this is the reason why I want to talk about this, because there's probably some of my CFP friends out there that are going like, I do that. And but I'm not a coach, and I get it. Yes. Coaching as a noun and versus coaching as a verb. Financial coaching as a verb is this something I think that all financial professionals should be doing with their clients, because like you said, clients may be used to this, I'm going to tell you what to do type of stuff. But, and I think there is some of that in our job to like help them articulate what they really want, because they say they want one thing and they really want something different when you start looking at their behaviors. So there's a lot of nuance in this. This is probably the reason why this is so needed, but, all that to say, I wonder what your thoughts are around getting trained specifically to do that type of unpacking versus trying to learn it on the fly, if you will. I don't know if you have any thoughts around that.
Oh, certainly. Clearly from my bio, you can tell I am so deep in education and I value the learning experience. So hands down, I will say that learning the skill of coaching is an asset. When we try to do things ad hoc without proper training, we do ourselves a disservice because we diminish our credibility, and we do our clients a disservice because we diminish the value that we can bring to them. And so keeping those two things in mind, I think it's important that a financial planner, a certified financial planner who wants to provide coaching services to their clients, who want to have that as a tool that they can offer in the service that they provide for their clients, training is the way to go. One thing that we want to make sure is that we are not harming people because of our lack of preparation. And so I'm definitely going to always say you need to be trained as a coach. I was trained as an executive coach, which incidentally is very different from financial coaching, because the focus of, and from my executive coach training, it was very solution focused, drive toward that solution. What I've discovered in my financial coaching is it's really about spending time with the client and allowing the client to unpack the solution that is inside of them that they really want to do anyway, but they've never been given the freedom to do it their own way. And to have that support of a professional saying, let's try this. And here's how I'm going to be the bumpers for you. Like in a bowling lane, I'm going to be the bumpers for you to make sure you don't destroy yourself financially, but you have the freedom to do it your own way.
No, that those are excellent points, because I've never trained as an executive coach, but I've had executive coaching done to me, if you will. And I do agree that the solutions, the push towards a solution is very akin to, if I'm correct, like how a financial advisor does it. And I think a point that you made that's very key is, since this is with money, and here's my own take after 20 years in the business, is people work hard for their money. They trade their human capital and time for it, and therefore they feel like they know what best to do with it. But that's just not true, because we're irrational. But I get it. And therefore, I think financial coaching is so unique in that you help people alongside. You don't take the reins from them. You still allow them to be in control to make this decision, because ultimately they're going to do what they want to do anyway with their own money. And that's where I think a lot of financial professionals get the pushback to be like, I did this great plan and the strategy was great and they didn't implement anything. I'm like, yeah, because it's 100% human behavior. Like, what are your thoughts there?
Well, I want to double back to what you said about people feel that they know what to do, what's best to do with their money. And I think as financial professionals, when we pull back and put pause on a statement right there, they do know what they want to do that is best for their money, that is best for them. And I think as an industry, financial professionals, we have come and we've been trained and we know all of these formulas and we know all of this strategy. And so in our minds, this is the best thing to do with your money. What financial coaching has taught me is it may be the best thing mathematically. It may be the best thing on a spreadsheet. It may even be the best thing for the result that the client says that they want. But like you just stated, implementation will never take effect until the client has buy-in. And that's where coaching comes into play, because now I can spend the time with the client and allow them to say what is important to them. What is their heart's desire? And then I couple that desire with a plan and a strategy. If you do the two separately, you will never get implementation. You will never get buy-in because the client has no emotional attachment to what you have created. But if we pause as professionals and trust that our clients truly know what is the best thing for them to do with their money, our job, to borrow from the story brand model, is to be the guide to help them say, this is what you're saying that you want. Here's a path to get there. Now let's look and see, is this path serving you well?
No, I think it is good to, and see, that's where I think I'm gonna.
Okay, Dom, somehow I lost audio. I don't hear you.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay,
oh,
so
there you are.
I think you make a good point there. I'm not gonna give pushback. I'm just gonna add a layer to that. I think this is where the financial professionals, we are uncomfortable for several reasons. The two top reasons, I think, is the first case is, by and large, we haven't done the work ourselves. So until you do the work yourself, and I always say, you can't give away what you don't have. So like, it's important to, like, that don't mean you have to have a financial coach or a financial professional. That might help, but you need to at least do the work. Do your own plan, have go through that, sit in the client's seat. The second is, our industry does not train us for the touchy-feely very well. It just, the CFP has just instituted a little bigger portion of behavioral finance, and it's still not enough.
Right.
And so we're so uncomfortable when it comes to that. And I think that is, to your point, a bigger disservice to the client. And so, like, as we move this along, because this is a super juicy topic here, but like, so what would be your thoughts? Because I think there is this convergence coming in the industry where, if you want to continue to retain clients and not just retain them and have AUM that you can bill on every quarter or whatever your deal is, but actually be transforming these clients' lives, because that's what they want. They want life transformation. They may not know how to articulate all the time, but that's our job. How do you see these two things merging? Like, because ideally, we would have a financial coach in every site, in every financial advisor's practice or financial professional's practice, but I know that's just not realistic. What are some thoughts on how we make this convergence happen?
So you touch on exactly where I was going. While it may not be feasible to have a literal coach in every practice, but the relationships can happen across geographic lines, across any barrier that may come up. So I have a relationship with a financial planner. And whenever clients come to her and she identifies that they need a little bit more of the emotional part of money relationships, and they need a little bit more, like you said, the touchy-feely before they are ready to jump into a plan, she will say to them, it sounds to me like you need a little money coaching at this part of the relationship. I have three coaches that I have a personal relationship with. Here are their short bios, their contact information, reach out to them. We then work with them on the stage of the money habits, you know, developing that saving habit, really connecting with what are some of the barriers, the mental models, the messaging that's hindering you from executing the plan that intellectually you know is the right thing to do, but there's something that's blocking you. Let's figure that out. Her training and her skill as a certified financial professional, that's not what she's there for. That is a waste of her talent. However, that is exactly what I'm trained for, and it's where I thrive. And so I spend the time with them and we talk about this and we get them to a position where now they're ready for financial planning. So when they go to work with her, the relationship that she and I have is very seamless, that we literally just transfer them back to her. And now they're ready to work with the financial plan. And some of the other stuff, the slower pace, unblocking and spending the time in coaching, she doesn't do, but I can do. And so truthfully, as the models converge, I think it's important for financial coaches to not be afraid of financial planners, right? There was a season in my life when I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't pass the exam.
What are y'all afraid of? We're so nice.
I don't know. It's crazy, right? But conversely, financial planners also need to see the value in financial coaches. Just because we don't have the fancy spreadsheets and the software that can do all these amazing calculations, the value that we each bring to the client is important. And so fostering those relationships with several financial coaches really is a way that you can help service your clients. Because what I will tell you is every client that leaves me, I don't have a formal, like, I'm going to transfer you back to my colleague. But everyone that leaves me, they always go back to her because they're saying to her, you sent me to Brandy and now I get it. And so I'm coming back to you because that relationship was important and you demonstrated value to me before value to yourself.
No, I think that's huge. There's some underlying tones in there about selflessness, about an abundance mentality, that there is really no competition if you're doing this thing the right way. And I think people have to, and I said this earlier, and this is not going to be a therapy session for people that are listening. It's not a free therapy session. You need to go hire somebody, but you need to go do the self-work is my point. If you're not thinking like that, because if you're thinking that there can't be sharing going along and things like that, so that the client is best served. With all the distractions and things vying for your attention on a day-to-day basis, when do you have time to consider what your purpose is? Have you thought about what it is going to take to achieve your goals? After having dozens of conversations with clients, I decided to provide a simple framework on how you can answer those questions. That framework is contained in my book called Assess, Address, and Adjust, a practical guide to becoming unstuck and achieving your goals. Look, if you've ever felt that you're losing the time for money trade and want to start winning in the next 30 days with real practical tips to improve your situation, or if you're not motivated to push through the day because you have a job you don't enjoy, a relationship you're ready to get out of, or just feel like you're not where you want to be in life, this book is for you, my friend. If you're ready to change that uncomfortable level of dissatisfaction that's currently going on in your life, and you want the tools to help you get unstuck, then head on over to domhendersonsr.com/theunstuckbook. And for a limited time only, you can get a signed copy by yours truly. Now let's get back to the conversation. I want to raise some points that I already know, some of the 90,000 CFPs out there are going to talk about. Dom, well, you know, the coaching hasn't even been around that long. It's pretty nascent, yada, yada, yada. There's no standardization around it. What organizations even exist to help me with this? And, you know, let's go ahead and silence the trolls, Brandy.
Every time I hear this, I chuckle because coaching as a methodology has been around for years. Financial coaching as a construct is fairly new to the industry of financial professionals. But the methodology of coaching has been around, oh my gosh, you can really trace coaching all the way back to the days of Socrates. So that, let's toss that out right now. It's not that this is an infant concept. The concept of coaching is not novel. However, when you look at the financial situation of a household, an individual, the approach that we have had as an industry of telling people what to do, giving them a plan and letting them walk out of our offices on their own has not been successful, or successful for every population of people.
Yeah, let's parse that, because I would say Wilson Muskin and I talked about very similar to the continuum of financial health that Sandra Davis created. Like, you know, let's say there's 15 steps from financial dependence into financial independence, right? Uh-huh. And the concentration that the industry has had for the 50 years or so that it's existed has been primarily on steps 12 through 15, right? It hasn't really even looked at step 0 through 12. Like, if you were in crisis or trauma mode and you had to go to triage, right, you know, and you need counseling for whatever, credit counseling, right? Like, they've just totally ignored those people. And so I think you're right, because when you start to look at, well, where has the success been? Well, it's probably been in that last quadrant, if you will, but nobody's even paid attention to these people in the first 10 steps. Is that where you're getting at with that?
Oh my gosh. So you opened this can of worms that I am about to indulge in. So here's the deal. Okay. My personal belief is America is built on a pull yourself up by your bootstraps theology, ideology, whatever ology you want to call it, right? And as a result, we have lauded and applauded people who have pulled themselves up financially, to the disservice of those who have not had the same economic opportunities, social opportunities, etc. As a result, you're right. All of those who are on the higher end of the spectrum and who have access to economic wealth and wealth power, the financial profession has targeted them because it's mutually beneficial. If you have wealth, then it's beneficial to me as a financial professional and vice versa. Where I find the financial services industry has been sorely lacking is around individuals who don't have access to the same resources. However, they still deserve quality service. And where I've seen coaching be most effective is not with people who have a lot of wealth, but actually individuals who are making kind of that middle group of people, middle class, working class, who have access to resources, but for whatever reason, they don't have the education, the skill, the knowledge, the confidence to manage those resources in a way that will bring about the freedom that they know is within arm's reach.
Well, and let's be honest about this. This isn't taught in school. I mean, we got less than, I haven't done this research in a while, but I still think the number is less than 15 states that require financial literacy to graduate. So, it's not being taught to us. It's almost like the construct, the social construct is trying to keep us on the hamster wheel of factory worker and or whatever.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you look at the Industrial Revolution, the American economy was built on individuals going into the factories and doing the work. You're tapping into my doctoral research because I looked into one of my classes was about social change. And when you look at how social and societal systems change, it's very much evolutionary. And so we have this sort of cycle of work, produce, consume. And so a very consumerist culture is prevalent here in America. And so it's not about building wealth for the majority. It's really about creating a model where the majority are consumers so that a minority can continue to build wealth. But that's off the topic of financial planners and coaches. And you've done too much, Dom. You've done too much.
Well, I mean, I think people to understand the psychology of this, and let's just be really honest here, I'll speak for myself. You know, I've said many times, and I will say this until I die, that good financial advice, whether you're talking about coaching, therapy, education, literacy, planning, whatever, has the ability to change family trees. Everybody should have that opportunity. Right. And it's sad that people don't. And I, as one, for the what I do on Jumpstart side is so that more people can get into the industry. Because I think this is not like rocket science necessarily that we're doing, where people can learn this and help others. So I totally agree with you. And I think that, you know, it's going to take some time for, like, you know, the dinosaur of the old age to kind of die off. But what I will say to your point is that a lot of the career changers and aspiring financial professionals that I'm talking to, they see it and they get it and they want to affect change. They don't want to be the broker back in the day. You know, this is the reason why I call it the broken dealer now, because it that model is broken. Nobody wants it anymore. Right. So there are some glimmers of hope. Can we unpack let's say I have a certified financial planner that's listening to this, and they're like, okay, I'm open to this, Dom. I'm listening to you. Like, where would I go to get these type of skills that you and Brandy are talking about?
So you need to go to Sage Financial and get certified with the Financial Fitness Coach certification. I have it, and Sandra is an amazing instructor. She's a pioneer in this space, and you will learn the coaching skills. What I love about the Financial Fitness certification is you come with the foundation of financial knowledge and you leave with the skills of a coach, with an understanding of how delicate and sensitive money is for clients. And how do you hold the space for them as a coach, not coming in and bulldozing them with your ideology and your beliefs of what is right, but really truly allowing the client to live in their own power. And that's something I wanted to go back to really quickly, Dom.
Yeah.
When we look at the people who don't have access to financial wealth or don't have access to financial resources, what I find most exciting for me in the work that I do with them is creating a space where people can feel confident in their own decisions. So much of financial, from financial professionals is about, I'm the expert, you are not. But when you can create an opportunity for a person to say to you, the professional, here is where I am. Here's the decision that I have made. Here's how it affects my life. And then they say to you, well, what do you think? And I always tell them, it doesn't matter what I think. You're living in this space, making the best choice with the resources that you have. How is that serving you?
Yeah.
Well, it's serving me well. Okay, great. What would you like to see different? That's the path we go. So I don't come with a preconceived plan or an idea or a notion, but I really come with a true desire for the client to feel confident in their ability to make the right decisions for their family and their household. And then I just sprinkle on some financial information to help them avoid the pitfalls and the speed traps. But when they can have that confidence, now when they come to a financial planner, they know what they want. So the plan becomes more effective. The plan becomes more sticky. They're likely to implement it because it's connected to their values, their beliefs, and their own decision making.
No, and I just wonder how, you know, a coach like yourself does all that work. You know, somebody comes to you, let's call it devoid of confidence because of various factors. And then you build that confidence up, and then they sit across some stuffy, you know, person that's like, I'm the expert behind their mahogany desk and their suit and tie, and maybe the confidence erodes again. I mean, I've been in so many different situations where it's just like people feel powerless, you know, when, you know, you got all these letters behind your name and you act as if you have all these letters behind your name and you just don't, you know, no bedside manner there. There's a lot of things. I mean, granted, there's a lot of great people in this industry too. Definitely. Sandra Davis is one of my best friends, great colleague. She does excellent work, obviously. And this is the reason why we're having this conversation, because I think financial professionals, specifically on the advice side, they need to hear this and understand where clients are so we can be more empathetic about how people really sometimes feel really like afraid, discouraged when they get to us because people have beat them up about their money and their money decisions all their life. Would you agree?
Oh my gosh, most definitely. And this is why what you said at the beginning is important. The converging of the careers, you know, financial professional, certified financial planners and financial coaches who are accredited should have healthy working relationships so that when the client acquires the confidence and they unravel and open this confidence that's already inside of them, that then I can refer them to a professional who will further build that relationship.
Yeah.
No. So the more we work together as financial professionals, the better we can serve our clients. Also, I wanted to mention that I'm on the AFCPE board, and I know that that's an area where financial professionals, certified financial planners are also becoming AFCs because then they are learning from a hands-on perspective. What are some of the clients who don't have a lot of assets under management? What are their experiences like? What are the questions that they will ask? What are the challenges that they experience? So the financial counseling background coupled with the financial planning background really creates a holistic approach for the financial planner. But I want to caution financial planners, don't try to be all things to all people.
Yeah.
And I think that that's where we also can inadvertently disservice our clients because we try to be all the things as if, oh my gosh, I have to be the one-stop shop. I'm very happy being a coach. I love it. And I fully respect my financial planner friends and I love having relationships with them that I can refer clients to. Yeah. And so there's a healthy balance between having all of the knowledge and the information for understanding's sake versus acquiring the knowledge and understanding because I'm trying to hoard the clients and keep them all to myself.
No, that goes back to that whole scarcity and that abundance mindset. I mean, I tell people this all the time because I help people scale their practices and get into the industry where I'm saying, okay, we got 300 million people in the United States. Divide that by two. That's probably about what the market is. If you can't find you 100 and 150 households in a profitable business model, you probably need to go do something else anyways, or go, or just go work with somebody, partner up. Like I already think that we have way too many you know, solo shops, hang my own shingle type of deal. But that's a whole nother topic.
Totally agree.
Tell us about the Three Little Divas, because I know this probably weaves into some of the things that we've talked about, at least these money stories and these money scripts that people use, and how people can get a hold of that if they want to look at that.
So, oh my gosh, the Three Little Divas. This was like a random project that burst out of a presentation I was talking with women about their money personalities and how they're interacting with money. And what does that look like? And I had saw a play performed with my daughters about the three little pigs. And immediately I saw the connection between the three little pigs and money personalities. And so the concept behind the book is they're three sisters and each one approaches their money situation from a different perspective based on their personality. So we have the spendthrift. We have the one who knows what's the right thing to do, but like we talked about today, she's got some blocks there. And so she's not following through on the things that she intellectually knows are the right things to do. And then we have the one who has the knowledge and acts upon the knowledge and what the outcome is. The book is designed to be a little mini workbook so that the reader can walk through and fill in her own narrative, her personal goals, her personal challenges, her financial situation, so that at the end of the book, it's not just understanding and knowing these characters, but it's understanding and knowing yourself.
Cool. So where can I get a copy of this?
They can go to thethreelittledivas.com and they will be able to get a signed copy of the book. I'll send it to them personally.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. Right. That's a treat. And we'll make sure we link that down in the bio also when we do this. So as we bring this in for a landing, you know, this podcast is to help empower tomorrow's financial professionals with tools to serve their ideal client at the next level. With that as context, Brandy, what would you leave as words of wisdom for them?
You know, I would say the greatest empowerment that you can provide to your client is trust that they know what is best for them. Even if you don't agree with it, trust that they are doing the very best that they can with the information that they have. And when you can fill in the gaps, you are allowing them to live a fuller, richer life on their own terms. And who doesn't want to live life on their own terms?
Mm. No. You make me want to reframe my thought, because I get the intention behind that. And I think we're on the same phase as that, even though I'm a little bit more, I'm probably a little bit more rough around the edges with the way I say it. But no, I get it. I totally get it. I think clients do know what they want. There is sometimes different dictionaries that we're operating from. And so it's, you know, use of language, being empathetic, actively listening, developing your communication skills and things like that to make sure that that's coming across and you're hearing not something you want to hear from a pre-filter or a pre-frame, but you're actually hearing what they want. So no, I get that. Excellent. Excellent. Well, I'm so happy that you spent this time with us today. Wonderful deposit that you've made into the Jumpstart community audience. Thank you for it so much.
Thank you. This was a joy. And I love catching up with you and chatting about something that I'm very passionate about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Brandy, take care and love the work that you're doing. Keep it up.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. I really hope you enjoy this conversation. Before we go, just a few things. The best way to retain what you just learned is to do more than just listen. You first might want to write down your most important takeaway and then give yourself a deadline to apply it. For bonus points, you might also let someone hold you accountable to that deadline. And remember, the only way more people will know about this podcast is if you share it. You can do that by sharing a link to this episode on your social media or by leaving a review on iTunes so that it reaches a wider audience. I'd appreciate it if you took the time to do either or both. And finally, if you'd like to learn more about how Jumpstart can help you become a next generation financial professional or partner with you in finding next generation talent for your organization, send us an email at hello@jumpstartcoachinglab.com, just in case you needed to get a pen to write that down. That's hello@jumpstartcoachinglab.com. Bye for now, until our next conversation.